The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily those of the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District or its employees. For more information about the Sewer District and its projects and programs, visit neorsd.org. The Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District presents Clean Water Works, a podcast that explores water, sewer, and stormwater issues that affect you and your community. Learn about the people, projects, and programs that are protecting your health and the environment here in Cleveland and throughout Northeast Ohio.
So we're doing a belated Engineer Week.
Right. Every week is Engineer Week.
Maybe every week.
Really.
Exactly.
Do you celebrate Engineers Week? You're both engineers. Do you do anything special?
Did you bake a cake?
You know what? I used to.
Really?
I did. I used to, one of these organizations. I used to run Engineers Week, and so we used to have all these activities throughout the week. And so in my mind, I still go, "Oh, Happy Engineers Week!" And then I just kind of quietly celebrate.
Can you tell us a little bit about Engineer Week? What do you know about it?
So, National Engineers Week, now, first of all, is scheduled to correspond with President's Day because President George Washington was an engineer. So,
is that right?
What?
I'm thinking this is a story that I kind of remember, so
Right. Look, it's on this fact sheet that you printed out for us.
Oh, look at that.
You're totally right.
I'm okay.
Considered the nation's first engineer.
Yeah.
For his survey work.
And so for years, now this is where you probably get me wrong, I don't know how many years, but there is a movement to celebrate National Engineers Week. And so every year they come up with a campaign, and they've built into like National Girls Engineering Day. They have like all these subsets of National Engineers Week highlighting the careers of engineers because, you know, we're cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Well,
you know.
Rest. Among other engineers we are.
Yeah. right.
Bars look pretty low.
It's a little. So.
Or high, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah. So it's just been something that's been going on for a number of years. People, there's a lot of activities. There are a lot of organizations that do something special.
Mm-hmm.
Really get across to individuals that engineers run the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Bold claim.
Seems like a lot.
Yeah. So there's like an exercise that I used to do when I used to go into schools, and I used to talk to kids about engineers and what do they do. And I go, okay, so let's just run me through the exercise of what you do in the morning. Just what's the first thing you do in the morning?
Mm-hmm.
And someone says, I get out the bed. I'm like, well, you know, an industrial engineer was responsible for the design of that bed. And the textiles, the linens that's on there, is also touched by an engineer. So what do you do next? And someone goes, I turn off the alarm clock. Oh, wow. You know, you try to go into the story that everything that is touched has been touched by an engineer. I mean, the students get to the bathroom, right? They go, I go use the bathroom. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
The toilet was designed by an industrial engineer, and then you go into, you know, there's hydraulics, so there's a mechanical engineer involved, hydraulics, and guess what do you do with the water where it goes? I don't know. Well, you know, it's something that, you know, it's really highlighted during that week.
We wanted to invite a couple of our own engineers here at the Sewer District to talk about how they got into the field, all the different kinds of engineers that there are. Talk about how your careers have taken perhaps different paths from when you started out or what you originally thought you'd be engineering and where you are today. So let's do some introductions. What do you think?
Sure. Rick?
Yeah.
Rick. Introduce yourself, Rick.
Introduce yourself.
I'm Rick Vincent. Here at the district, I am the collection system design manager, which means I manage a group of engineers who are managing a lot of our projects out in our collection system, which consists of all the sewers and tunnels and all of that kind of fun stuff. Being in the engineering and construction department, we get pulled into a lot of different things at the sewer district, reviewing plans that come in from developers in and around the community, doing some outreach to folks in the community as it relates to our projects and keeping people informed, stuff like that. And then because the sewer district is great, we all get to do lots of fun things. And I personally enjoy being involved in sort of the social justice type issues that are related to our projects, environmental justice, and other sort of DE&I aspects that are related to our projects. So I'm personally passionate about that. So I try to bring that into our designs as well.
Angela?
Yeah. So Angela Jones, Government Affairs Specialist 2 here at the district. I've been here for over 14 years. My role here is kind of, I'll call it like the liaison role, because I work with elected officials and key stakeholders and kind of help them understand the work that we do. And then I also work with my engineering and construction partners and go through the design and the construction side of projects to fully be able to articulate that to the community and kind of be that voice. You know, I'm the interceptor, so I get the calls of my house is about to fall down, to, you know, you cracked my sidewalk or because of the work. And my role is to kind of mitigate all that and to make sure that we are timely and not always reactive, but also proactive and engaging with our customers. Mm-hmm. My background is in civil engineering. Mm-hmm. So I started off my career as a design engineer, designing water and wastewater treatment plants.
Oh, you started off with water right away.
I did. Mm-hmm. Working with a private global engineering firm and just being able to work with a team of engineers to provide a solution for their problems. And so being in a position to be able to have that liaison kind of role that I am now with those firms just led me to my opportunities and kept opening up doors, and now I'm here at the district.
Did you always have the idea that you wanted to be more of a liaison role as opposed to actually designing?
I really had no true, this is what I want to do, right? In high school, I went to a special math and science program that exposed us to the engineering world, right? I mean, but I didn't have anybody in my family that was an engineer, so I didn't know what it looked like. So my parents, I thank them for just putting me in position, putting me where I can take advantage of programs that expose me to the possibilities. And then once I got in, I kind of navigated through, you know, what I liked and what I didn't like. I never forget, I shadowed some architects, because at first I kind of thought I wanted to design houses. And so I went and shadowed an architect's office, and I was like, oh, I'm about to die. It was so boring. And I probably, no shame to the architects, because I've got a lot of architect friends. I've always had this notion of giving back. So my father, you know, he worked for the post office for years, but he was active in his ward and block club meetings. You know, he assisted his friends when they were running for campaigns. So I've always just been naturally predestined to just kind of give and do. Mm-hmm. And so, and sometimes being an engineer, if you're not put in the right role, you don't get that opportunity. Well, fortunately, it kind of worked out. The private firm I used to work for needed someone who was a little bit more engaging than the guys and girls that just got to sit behind the computer. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of was able to kind of show that side. And know that my whole purpose, or my sole purpose in life, is to make sure that the younger generation has that exposure to be an engineer so they can see that possibility in themselves.
Do you think it's a field that kids don't naturally learn about, or you're trying to shed some light on it and make it
Yes.
more of an opportunity?
Some of the engineers, it's not the coolest, you know, it's not cool, it's not sexy. It just depends on what your definition of cool and sexy is, right? for me, the opportunity of seeing what you do impact the community as a whole right away is really fulfilling. You know, the work that we do, you just can't see it all the time. So we got to show it to them. We got to make it cool. We got to make it sexy. We got to give it a possibility and give it a face.
Rick, what about you?
So in high school, I always heard math and science, you should be an engineer. That was like, that was about the extent of it. And my dad was in public, public employee in the state of Rhode Island. And he was a planner. So that was the closest thing to engineer. He was a city planner in our city when I was growing up, and then he transferred to the state. I kind of knew that, all right, I was going to do engineering. I probably wanted to do civil engineering, just kind of, but I'm, sorry, Dad, if you're listening to this, but I'm way better at math and science than my dad ever was. So that's why I went engineering as opposed to city planning, and he was more of a history major. But anyway, so I started out as a structural engineer. I have a degree in structural engineering. And my journey kind of was influenced by the employer that I ended up working for. I was a co-op at a firm called Sverdrup, which doesn't exist anymore. They were big into, you know, railroad engineering, civil engineering of, you know, roadways, but also tunnels and bridges. And when I graduated from college, I was like, I'm a structural engineer. I want to design bridges. I came out of college and I was like, I put in a group and I designed my first bridge. I was super excited. It was on Martha's Vineyard. It was a tiny little 50-foot bridge that was, you know, just it connected the sort of the island of Martha's Vineyard to the other island, Chilmark, that was like on the very eastern end or northern end, I think. So, you know, but perfect little assignment for an entry-level engineer. I literally took a homework assignment from one of my classes to design that bridge. It literally just plugged and chugged. And
plugged and chugged.
That's a little terrifying. Yeah. I know we're all adults here, and so we know that none of us know what we're doing. But that's terrifying.
He knew what he was doing in college, I guess.
No, back then I was good at calcs and stuff. It was a precast concrete box girder bridge where it was pre-stressed. Which means that the rebar in there, they pull it, and then they cast the concrete around it, and they release it, and so that rebar is in tension when it's cast around it and it bonds to that rebar. Mm. So it puts that concrete beam into compression before it's used. Mm. So it's already pre-stressed. And then you put it down on the roadway, and when the load hits on it, it nets out that stress and it makes it more efficient. It makes that beam more efficient. So I literally had pre-stressed concrete assignments in college, and all I had to do was change the dimensions. But the point of telling that story is that it was super boring. You know, it goes back to like, I'm not going to keep.
Because it wasn't challenging?
It was so easy. It was like, you know, I did the drawings too. I did the CAD. I did everything. And it was so like cookie cutter, like where I could just do that again. And all the bridges that I would foresee myself doing were all kind of like ODOT type bridges or in this case, you know, MDOT, you know, Massachusetts. So, you know, do this again and again and again and again. And some engineers love that. Some engineers want to just kind of repeat, and that was not me. So luckily, because at that time that company had huge tunnel projects, they had won a bunch of tunnel projects. They had the Big Dig. They had the Big Dig. Yeah. They had Massachusetts Water Resources Authority water tunnel, which were these big water supply tunnels that would supply water to Boston. And the tunnel group needed help. And so I was relocated out of the structural group with the bridges and into the tunneling underground group. And I luckily got a mentor who taught me how to do tunnels. I did not learn tunnels in college. Nobody really does. Yeah, it's very few. And I loved it because every tunnel is different no matter where you are. Mm-hmm. Like you can go even within Cleveland, you can go from one side of the block to another side of the block. You've got to design that tunnel differently because the ground is different. Mm-hmm. Because the ground is your lining. You know, that's how tunnel engineering works. So you have to study the ground, the materials of the ground, and use that to design your tunnel. I love that because you can also be a little creative. There weren't a lot of codes written about it, another terrifying thing. But like, you know, you used existing concrete codes. You used like the material codes that were there.
Sure.
But the code to like design a bridge, there's tons of codes.
It's like
all these rules.
It's volumes and volumes of codes that have been, and it's just too stringent. But with tunnels, you could be creative because you got to get down there. You got to get around certain things to get there. You got to be creative. Well, contractors are creative. Contractors are really creative in it. You had to really understand the business of construction to design a tunnel. Mm-hmm. And I love construction. So it really got me into that sort of mindset of like, how is this going to get built? Because you have to understand that to design this tunnel, design the shaft to get down there, all of that stuff. And there's different ways to do it. I love the fluidity of it, the flexibility of it. And then the challenge of trying to put together drawings and specifications that actually allowed for that fluidity, allowed for the flexibility. So it suited me really, really well. I was an artist in high school too. So like, you know, so that sort of like that side blended well, that creative side of my personality blended well with this side of engineering. Yeah.
To a point you just made about tunnels, would you say that the ground that you tunnel in is actually part of the tunnel?
It is the tunnel. The ground is the tunnel. I mean, so any tunnel, the ground around it is what preserves that tunnel, because that the earth pressure is your friend. You know, it puts, especially a round tunnel, right? Most tunnels are round, but some of them are rectangular. But a round tunnel is in hoop compression, right? So the ground pushes on that tunnel and keeps it in compression, and keeps those forces in the lining locked in, but not so rigidly that the lining of that tunnel can't move. You know, sort of imperceptibly move, but like the forces, like in an earthquake. If you have an earthquake, you really don't worry too much about tunnels, because an earth moving, the tunnel's going to move with the ground. Mm-hmm. You know, you worry about things that are up above the ground, because the ground's moving like this, but the thing up above the ground doesn't want to go. Like it's already, right. You know, it's fixed, and then the ground moves below it. They're like, what's happening? You know, it's shimmying below you.
You're missing a lot of good body motion. Yeah.
So the ground is your tunnel, is the point. Like that's you know, you really have to understand that's the material you're working with. You got to be able to put that lining in and preserve and lock in those ground forces. But so it's different everywhere you go, even within this building. This organization, all the tunnels we built here, they're not all the same. You know, mm-hmm. you can't take one design from one and then move and just kind of cut and paste it into the other one. You have mm-hmm. to kind of start over and look at the ground.
What's your favorite project that you've ever worked on?
I used to work for Malcolm Perney, so we were the lead design on the Baldwin Water Works treatment plant here in Cleveland.
Oh,
where's that?
Baldwin Water Works, right off of Fairhill. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful facility.
Oh my God! Mm-hmm. I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous. You know, you see the top level, but once you get down and you see the pipes mm-hmm. and what was designed that was high tech back then, which is still high tech today. I got a chance to design a stop log structure, so where you can split the flow of the filters, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was like, okay, we need you to figure this out. And I'm like, me? I need to figure it out. I'm like, oh my God. And so I did my research. The guys showed me how to do it, and I designed it, and they stamped it or whatever, and then they built it. So every time I go out to Baldwin, I stand on top of it. I'm like, this is my stop log. And so, I really lean into my nerd side. I get excited about all the projects that I'm a part of. I love kind of working in this space, and just I love the projects that we work on, and it's mm-hmm. everything is just interesting. Mm-hmm. I had a quick laugh when you were talking about your bridge design, mm-hmm. and I just always go back to my bridge design project in school. We designed a cable stayed pedestrian bridge over this lake at Ohio Northern University, and I am completely obsessed with cable stayed bridges. So everywhere I go, I'm looking for this cable stayed bridge, and I'm like, oh, look at that.
That I will say probably the coolest type of bridge.
Oh, it is.
Cable stay bridges are probably among the... I was actually...
Can you say what that... What is
oh,
that?
Sorry. So oh, that's sorry. That's when...
Yeah, non-engineers over here.
Yeah, so that's... So, you know, well, a good example would be, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge. Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, you've seen that one, right? So it's basically the deck is supported by cables, mm-hmm. and the main supporting elements are cables that go open over a tower of some mm-hmm. kind, and that design... Bringing it up and over those towers is actually an efficient design. You know, that the curvature of that cable, when you know, it's not just pretty, it actually has a purpose. Yeah. And I don't remember all the details anymore. It's been too many years for
Boston. Boston has a great cable stay.
Well, I was going to say, so I get to work on the...
Did you work on that one?
So that was part of the big dig portion that I worked on, but it wasn't the bridge itself. So there's the largest, at least back in the late 90s, early 2000s, the largest asymmetric cable stay bridge in the world was on the Big Dig. You hear a lot of bad news about the Big Dig, but there were a lot of firsts on the Big Dig. Mm-hmm. The first use of slurry walls, which we use on all of our shafts today, the first use of slurry walls as a permanent support element. Mm-hmm. Those are the walls of the tunnel.
Can you say what a slurry wall is?
Slurry wall is it's basically a concrete wall that you build in the ground before you excavate the ground. So when you go down there, the wall's already in place. So you basically dig a trench and you install concrete and rebar or concrete and steel I-beams in the wall from the surface down, and you dig these trenches at, 9 or 10 feet at a time. And you fill the trench with slurry. Slurry is a heavy water. It's like made with bentonite. Keeps the trench open. And then you pump concrete from the bottom to the top of that trench, and you displace the slurry and replace it with concrete. And then you let it cast in the ground, underground. And then you go down between these slurry walls that you put one side or the other, and you can dig down in between them and support the ground with those walls. So,
that was the first?
The Big Dig did that and, used that as part of the final tunnel lining. And I designed a lot of the connections, all the roof connections, all the roof. So when I drive through the Big Dig, I look up and I say, I did all these beams. I designed all these beams. My favorite job from a pure technical standpoint is this job I did out in California called SLAC, Stanford Linear Accelerator Center. And it was a tunnel that was built
for Adams?
For literally splitting
so cool.
atoms.
Oh,
and so,
oh my gosh.
So and it was the coolest requirement on that, which I didn't think was cool at the time, but we found a way around it. The base slab of that tunnel, because of the atoms, because of the instrumentation they were going to put in there and the laser they were going to shoot, could not move more than 1 micron.
Yeah.
Like the slab couldn't move. And we told them that's impossible. Basically, it is. I mean, the ground. From heat, from anything, it moves more than that. But we found a way around it. They found a way to incorporate it into the equipment itself as opposed to our...
So that it would adjust as the...
Right. The technology that was going in there was the brightest X-ray beam, like a billion times brighter than anything on the planet. So they could do these experiments and they could shoot this laser and hit the target for the experiment without destroying the thing they were hitting. Normally a laser, you'd get one shot at it. You know, you shoot the thing, it would destroy, but you'd get pictures right before it was destroyed. This thing, it created, it hit a billion-dollar mirror or something, which split the laser beam into an X-ray. Now this is stuff, this is like super cool stuff that you hear about when you're building the tunnel. But like, nothing to do with me, but like, it hit the medium and it wouldn't destroy it, so they could take longer pictures, And somebody won a Nobel Prize because of that facility that we built.
Did you, when the Nobel Prize guy or woman went up, were they like, I'd like to thank,
Rick Vincent. So nobody knows about, to Angela's point earlier, nobody knows about engineers and what they do, and the stuff that like allows people like that to have that.
The unsung Nobel. Heroes. Are there things about working in the water field that you wouldn't experience with, for instance, building a bridge or building a building?
Right. I loved water. My sign is, it's an air sign, but it's an Aquarius, so it's a water carrier. And I've just always been predestined to be in this space. And so when I graduated from Ohio Northern and I took a job up here in Cleveland, my husband was like, well, what are you going to be doing? I'm like, I'm working in water. And so that's all he really knew. But it's just so fascinating because, water being the, we cannot live without water.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so to be working in the space that's responsible for not only cleaning it for you to drink, but also cleaning it so we can return it back to Mother Nature so it can continue to be used is, it's something. Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of similarities to other sort of civil engineering disciplines. In other disciplines, you're worried about water outside of things. You're worried about water
getting into things.
Whereas in our world, it's water staying in and keeping the groundwater out, but also water, keeping water that we don't want to let leak out of our pipes, right? Unless it's in the spot where we want it to come out. So
I talked to one of the engineers once, one of the city engineers, and he's like, yeah, your guys have weird jobs because as a developer, when he was a developer, he's like, all you're concerned about is how do you get the water off the property as quickly as possible.
Right.
Which is, like, what we don't want them to do.
Right.
Like, we want them to, like, hold and maintain and do water quality measures and water quantity measures. And
that's
so
right.
It's funny. It's totally true.
Yeah. But, I mean, civil engineering, I'd say in general, the commonality among it, and that's the reason I liked it, because is that you do touch more people.
Yeah.
You know, with a civil engineering degree than you do with maybe a mechanical or chemical even, or some of these other ones, electrical. I think, and that was what was appealing to me when I was deciding which discipline to choose when I was in college, is I wanted to do something that, you know, made the world better, and I figured, all right, well, that's going to touch more of the world than maybe one, you know, widget in a machine or something like that.
Donna, I think we have an opportunity for a trivia question.
Oh,
your game
boy.
Show. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. Who is the patron saint of engineers?
Oh, jeez.
Oh.
Patron saint of engineers.
Oh, you got me on that one.
Kind of timely, wouldn't you say?
I would say that.
Oh,
McDonald's would also agree.
Oh, is there, are these hints? Is it St. Patrick or something like that?
Ding, ding, ding.
St. Patrick.
Well, I don't know. Based on Mike's hint, that was totally.
I figured out a way to get rid of all those snakes.
Isn't
that what St. Patrick did? Chase
with the staff or something. Okay, next question. Pi Day is coming up. How many digits of pi do you have memorized?
Oh.
Not many. 3.14. Was it 5?
Nope.
I've got the next 3 in my head.
Yeah. It's 3.14159 something.
That's as far as I got to. I like this question, Mike. What are some engineering accomplishments around Cleveland that inspire you?
Yeah, things you see around town, you're like,
oh, okay. Well, I mean, I got to give it to our projects. I mean, I don't know.
Our tunnel projects, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean,
just the scale.
I think, you know, it is hard to express, like, how much goes into those projects, some of the challenges that you face out in the field, and the, you know, just
having to work around a bunch of things.
Working around things, you know, trying to, you know, lessen the impact to the surrounding community. All of that takes a lot of effort. And when you get done and you kind of look around at, like, what you've built, it is, like, massive. You guys also mention our 100-year-old brick sewers.
Yeah.
You know, we've all seen pictures and, you know, some of the, especially the bigger ones like Walworth, you know, 16-foot diameter.
Oh, wow,
and they just, you know, still look great to me, you know.
Hand-built brick by brick, 100 years old.
Tunneled through, you know, under compressed air probably. You know, back then they used compressed air where they would just keep the ground from caving in by just pumping air in there.
Oh,
so the workers would get the bends when they come out and stuff like that. I mean, this was dangerous work.
So they're just forcing air in there?
Yeah, to keep the groundwater and the ground from coming in, they would use compressed air. You know, it's an ingenious idea, except that you had to, like, wait to come out.
You learn something new every day, right?
A lot of people were dying. Because
I feel like it would just crush your skull.
No, it was not enough to hurt the people in there because they would acclimate to it, but then they had to reacclimate coming out.
Wasn't that part of the one of the tunnel boring machines had to have, like, a decompression area?
All of the ones in soil have to have that. The tunnel we're digging right now, the shoreline storage tunnel, it's, you know, going to probably mine out in about a month from now.
Mm-hmm.
That one has a at the front of the machine, the chamber behind the cutter head that cuts the soil has a pressurized chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to counterbalance the pressure that the ground wants to come in through, you know, so you're trying to keep the soil and the water from coming in, but you're behind that. Behind that chamber is free air, is like we are sitting here now. So if we have to go and maintain the head of that machine, we open a door. It's like a, you know, a what do they call it? Like a diver's door or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they go in there and they work on it, but they have to wait to come out and they have to decompress and then wait, you know, so it takes extra time to go in there and do work, and they can only be in there for a certain amount of time under that pressure because you don't want to lose that pressure and you don't want the soil to start coming in through that chamber and lower the pressure. So you have to keep it up. So yeah, so that technology is still used, but it's much safer now. It's not like everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Part of your job, Angela, especially, and Rick, somewhat, the work you do, the outreach work, is to encourage the next generation of engineers. Is there a shortage of engineers?
Absolutely. There is a shortage, and wow, I should have had those statistics with me. There's a shortage of engineers, there's a shortage of minority engineers, and a shortage of women engineers. A lot of kids don't want to take the time to learn the math and science, which is the foundation of being an engineer. Or it's not cool, it's not sexy, so they really don't get into it. The National Society of Black Engineers has a campaign to increase the number of minority engineers by 25,000 in a period of time. And so they're being very aggressive to making sure that the exposure is given to the young kids at a young age, because there's research that has shown if a kid does not start advancing in math by like the sixth grade, they won't be on a path to take advantage of engineering careers. And so it's this big push to make sure, you know, to share with students, you know, the opportunities. And so they'll continue to progress in their math classes at an earlier age. So once they finish high school, they're in a position to take advantage of the classes needed to be an engineer. So you got to catch them young.
Yeah.
So you can get them through that entire pipeline. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying if you didn't have any of the math when you graduated from high school that you can't do it. You can. Mm-hmm. It's just a little longer journey to get there. Mm-hmm. So
we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the ACE program that the sewer district is part of, right? So that's the Architecture, Construction, and Engineering Mentorship Program that both Angela and I. Angela was the founder of it here at the sewer district. I got involved when I joined, and it's a great program to raise awareness at the high school level, at least, of those fields by going into the schools and serving as volunteer mentors and kind of doing activities and a project that shows the students what it's like to do an engineering project.
Yeah.
And then there's a competition at the end.
So it's
raising that awareness, though, even, you know, to those who have had that, because maybe they're choosing, you know, maybe they're, you know, like you said before, doctor, lawyer, or whatever. That's what we all heard growing up. Also engineering, right. You know, and this is what it's like.
A teacher in high school that shared with me that, you know, going back to your purpose, find something that you're passionate about,
right.
And then pair that with being an engineer. And then, you know, and so
as long as engineer is in
there. Right. And so I wanted to be a smarty, right? I said, well, I love to eat, right? And he said, well, you know what? You should look into chemical engineering, because then you can get involved in the process of making food and making food last longer, or the whole thing. And I was like, oh. I'm going to school to be a chemical engineer. I mean, but it's just that simple.
Yeah.
We're fortunate here at the sewer district, they have invested over the years in several student programs to share and expose youth to STEM-based careers. So we have the Cleveland STEP program for 6th through 9th graders that we take on tours around the city to expose them with, you know, possible careers, and we make sure that they see some engineers in the mix of all that, mm-hmm. so they can get that exposure and kind of begin to see themselves as that person. And then, of course, the ACE program, mm-hmm. that's for, we're now at Garrett Morgan High School, mm-hmm. On our team. This year's project, they have reimagined Burke Lakefront Airport.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, what is the coolest thing?
Are they going to go to
the
city of Cleveland and be like, you don't need your master plan anymore.
right.
We did it for you.
Yeah, they scrapped the whole airport notion, and they've got all these different components on it. But it's so cool.
Yeah.
It's good to see the kids kind of get involved. And when they understand that, you know, being an engineer, you know, you get a chance to dream and then kind of take that dream and make it into reality.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Very cool.
That's very, very cool.
Rick Vincent, Angela Jones, thank you very much for joining us.
Happy to.
In our belated
Absolutely.
Engineer Week celebration.
Did you know eligible customers can save up to 40% on their sewer charges? Learn more about the Sewer District's cost-saving programs and use our discount calculator at neorsd.org/save or call 216-881-8247. That's neorsd.org/save or 216-881-8247.
Clean Water Works is produced by the Communications and Community Relations Department at the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District. Our music was composed and performed by G.S. Schrey. If you have a question or suggestion, or if you'd like to learn more about the Regional Sewer District, visit neorsd.org or call 216-881-8247.